This is Radio Superior 1953, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the evening Gather Round show.
Come on in and gather around, campers. I'm Tim Michaels, lighting the campfire. It's Saturday, June 20th, 1953. Lou Martin has the 6 o'clock news and the latest on the Rosenberg's execution. Rapid Ray is in with sports. German farmers will visit. And it's June wedding time with Bubba.
Bubba?
Bubba Bronkowski, the fashion designer. He's a guy who has said that after World War II, grays and whites are out and pinks and yellows are in for men.
Missed the whole side of the barn with that one.
The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by WFTV, Duluth Superior's first television station, Channel 38. Tune in Monday nights at 7 for I Love Lucy. It's your turn, Lou.
Good evening, Tim, and good listeners. The Rosenberg's execution are quiet drama, but with a global reaction. The Chinese Reds mass troops as truce talks break off. And East Germany is a powder keg. We begin our world report from Sing Sing Prison.
This is Ossining, New York, Relman Morin, Associated Press. I was an official witness to history last night, in the room as Julius Rosenberg and his wife Ethel walked quietly to the electric chair. They were executed for delivering to Soviet Russia the secrets of the atomic bomb. Neither one of them talked, nor attempted to talk, as the last moment came. Both entered the death chamber in Sing Sing prison with firm steps and stony faces. They were executed shortly before sunset, so that the grim task would be finished before the beginning of the Jewish Sabbath. It was a day after their 14th wedding anniversary. As the fixed hour approached, two telephone lines were opened between the office of Warden Wilfred Denno and Washington, presumably to be in touch with the office of Attorney General Herbert Brownell. The Rosenbergs spent most of their last day together. Warren Denno said they talked from about noon to 6:20 p.m. in the women's wing of the prison. They were separated by a wire screen. The official witnesses entered the death chamber a few minutes before 7. It's a square room. Behind the electric chair was a white wheeled table. In front were four rows of benches, like pews in a church. The room was heavy with silence. From overhead, the lights beamed on the electric chair. Then Rabbi Irving Koslow entered. He wore black robes with a white praying shawl. He was intoning the words of the 23rd Psalm, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." Julius Rosenberg was a step behind him. It was about 7:02. The 35-year-old Rosenberg wore dark brown trousers, a white undershirt with short sleeves, and low slippers without heels. His mustache had been shaved off, his glasses removed. He turned without guidance to the electric chair and sat down quietly. The black helmet was placed on Rosenberg's head. Black straps were fixed around his chest. The other electrode was set against his right leg. The trouser had been slit, so the leg was bare from the knee down. The guard stepped away. A signal was given to the executioner, Joseph Franzel, in an alcove to the left of the room. A metallic rattle sounded. It sounded like marbles rolling down a metal washboard. Then it stopped. The room was filled with a humming buzz. His chest bulged, straining against the straps, his fists clenched in tight knots, his neck and shoulders crimson. There were three massive charges of electricity. The first lasted 3 seconds, the second and third 57 seconds each. He was dead in 2¾ minutes. The humming stopped. It was 7:06. The body was lifted onto the white table and wheeled out of the room. About 3 minutes later, Rabbi Koslow's voice again came from beyond the door. The guard pulled it open. The rabbi entered, holding the prayer book almost on a level with his eyes. He read both the 15th and 31st Psalms, "Who shall sojourn in thy tabernacle?" The 37-year-old Ethel Rosenberg wore a shapeless green dress with a small white pattern. It had no belt. The sleeves were short, and the neckline was high and round. She also wore slipper-style shoes. Unlike her husband, she looked around the room. Her eyes flicked from face to face, across the row of witnesses, and down the line of guards. She stopped in front of the electric chair and started to turn toward it. Suddenly, she stopped. Two women had followed her into the chamber. One was Mrs. Helen Evans, prison matron, and the other Mrs. Lucy Menny, a former matron and now a telephone operator. Ethel Rosenberg whirled back from the chair and extended her arms toward Mrs. Evans. Her hand was outstretched. Mrs. Evans took it between both of hers. Mrs. Rosenberg pulled the short, white-haired matron toward her, and the two women kissed. Again, the black helmet, straps, and leg contacts were set in place. Just before the gear was placed on her head and face, Mrs. Rosenberg closed her eyes. She winced slightly as the electrode was fixed on her head. The chamber was hot. There was no sound except the half-whispered words of the rabbi. Then the switch was thrown, and the metallic rattle sounded again. Mrs. Rosenberg's hands clenched. Then, as before, the straps were taken from her chest and the doctors examined her. They moved the stethoscope several times, and there was a whispered consultation. They stepped away, murmured to Warden Denno, and the warden signaled the guards to replace the straps. Twice more the switch was thrown, and a buzzing hum, more vibration than sound, filled the chamber. It was finished. With a second examination, Dr. Kipp looked up and said, "I pronounce this woman dead." The second execution had begun at 7:11 p.m. and ended at 7:16. In Ossining, New York, this is Relman Morin.
This is Jack Bell in New York. At the hour of retribution, crowds demonstrated in New York, London, and Paris. Hysterical sympathizers, screaming and crying, milled around New York's Union Square. Street fights broke out in Paris, and several policemen were wounded. In London, thousands roved the streets, waving the communist newspaper Daily Worker, which carried a single word in giant type, murder. In Dublin, kerosene bottles were thrown through the window of the U.S. Information Office. They did not explode. But in Ossining, where the prison is located, the night was quiet. Heavy details of police and state troopers met no demonstrators. So closed the story of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, which began more than 3 years ago with the arrest of Dr. Klaus Fuchs, German-born atomic scientist who was working at an atomic laboratory in Great Britain. That was in February 1950. On June 16th of 1950, David Greenglass was arrested in New York. He was the younger brother of Ethel Rosenberg. The trail followed by detectives on both sides of the Atlantic led from Fuchs through several other men to Greenglass and from him to Julius and Ethel Rosenberg. Julius was arrested July 17th, his wife August 11th, 1950. Each denied before God and man the story that Greenglass told, that they had all been units of an espionage network designed to ferret out the secrets of atomic energy and relay the information to the Russians. Greenglass testified that his sister told him, quote, "Julius finally got to the point where he was going to do what he always wanted to do, give information to the Soviet Union," unquote. The Rosenbergs called it a monstrous frame-up. They were the first non-military convicts in the history of the United States to be executed for espionage. In New York, this is Jack Bell, AP.
Hello, this is Seoul, South Korea. Max Jordan reporting. The Reds today massed some 16,000 fresh troops along the East Central Front, seen the past week of the greatest communist offensive in 2 years. U.S. 8th Army reported the Red buildup as Allied air power suffered its heaviest losses of the war this past week, helping to stall the great communist drive. Two new Red divisions are moving into the Pukon River line, the sector where perhaps 40,000 communists pushed South Korean troops back 2 miles Sunday and Monday. Fighting is light, however. Air Force announced 19 planes went down behind communist lines, most from anti-aircraft guns. None fell in dogfights in which Sabre jets shot down 19 Red MiG jets. Day and night, UN warplanes in record waves dumped bombs and jellied gasoline on communist troops to play a major role in stemming the greatest Red drive since 1951. In Seoul, this is Max Jordan.
This is Moon Son. Along the 38th parallel, Daryl Bergen here. The Reds today angrily told the Allies if the UN wants a truce, it must control South Korea's rebellious government and recapture 26,000 anti-Red prisoners freed by President Syngman Rhee. Although the communists protested, they did not rule out an armistice. But their terms appear impossible. The Korean prisoners have melted into the countryside with Rhee's blessing, and the split between South Korea and the UN command apparently is growing deeper. South Korea's acting Prime Minister, Y.T. Pune, made public a letter to UN Commander General Mark Clark demanding freedom for 9,000 anti-Red left in Allied stockades because, quote, "we must free them all," unquote. It was written Thursday. At almost the same time, Clark made public a letter written the same day blistering Rhee and accusing him of breaking recent assurances that South Korea would make no moves without consulting Clark. Rhee's action has cracked the unity of the Allies, and the Reds are making the most of it. In Moonsong, this is Daryl Berrigan reporting.
West Berlin calling. Stan Turner reporting. East Germany's leading communist newspaper admitted today the Soviet zone is rocked by strikes and disorder. Major General Thomas Timberman, American commander in red-encircled West Berlin, says the Russians have brought in two armored divisions, about 25,000 men, to throttle rebellious East Berlin. Quoting Timberman, these two divisions can tamp the place down for a while. What happens then, I don't know. I do know what happens when you tamp down dynamite. I'm certain that these Russian gunners with their tank muzzles staring down our throat know themselves that this is no solution to the overall problem. Communist officials claim that strikes and unrest are dying down after last Wednesday's riotous anti-Red outburst in which 100 Germans are rumored to have been killed. But Neues Deutschland, the Communist Party organ in East Germany, admitted chaotic conditions still prevail. It further disclosed that the huge Luna synthetic gasoline refinery near Halle, swept by a huge fire yesterday, was struck. The plant employs 23,000 workers. In West Berlin, this is Stan Turner.
This is Drew Pearson with a Washington whirligig. Scientists are loath to discuss in public, but some privately suspect there's more connection than the Weather Bureau admits between the atomic tests in Nevada and the unprecedented wave of tornadoes sweeping the nation. Here's the way one top physicist privately feels, quote, "The forces that make up our weather are vastly greater than the power of those atomic blasts. But the really important question is, can an A-bomb explosion trigger an explosion in the atmosphere? We all know that a few handfuls of silver iodide properly vaporized can bring down tons of rainfall. The silver iodide simply triggers the action. For years, scientists have performed experiments with the Wilson Cloud Chamber. That's a glass chamber containing clear, moist air. Following an atom blast, the air becomes full of dust particles. Not just ordinary dust, but radioactive or charged stuff. It's the same kind of charged dust we use to trigger the reaction in the Wilson Cloud Chamber. Take the case of the Eastman Kodak Company. They are located in Rochester, New York, 3,000 miles away from the atom test grounds. Despite the distance, however, Eastman can detect radiation from an A-blast on their photographic film in Rochester. In fact, Eastman authorities are warned in advance of each explosion so they can safeguard their film from radioactive dust shot into the air 3,000 miles away. Remember, if this charged dust can float to Rochester, it can also float to Worcester, Massachusetts, or Flint, Michigan, or Cleveland, Ohio, where they've just had tornadoes. In Washington, this is Drew Pearson.
Ohio Republican Representative Voorhees said today the House, by approving intact a $5 billion foreign aid program, has given President Eisenhower a 2-to-1 vote of confidence. Voorhees led the administration fight to prevent slashes in foreign aid, which was finally approved after a sharp 7-hour debate. More Democrats than Republicans voted for it. The measure now goes to the Senate. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:09. Tim Michaels has this message from WFTV.
Duluth Superior's first television is on the air. WFTV Channel 38 brings you the finest quality television enjoyment, including views of the news with stories from our region. Tune in and see Dennis Murphy and Rocky Teller as your personalities, but also enjoy Armchair Theater at 10 o'clock every night, bringing movies right into your living room. From The Miracle of Television, WFTV, UHF Channel 38, now on the air, broadcasting from downtown Duluth across the street from Hotel Duluth. Lou?
A torrent of rain is causing flooding across upper Wisconsin. KUWS Radio News, Mike Simonson has the story.
Superior's eastern section was blocked off from the south this afternoon as water from yesterday's rains swelled Bluff Creek. The new highway of U.S. 253 and 13 is 3 to 4 feet underwater right now. Bluff Creek Bridge on Itasca Street is closed to traffic as the structure may give way at any moment. Lightning and wind destruction followed this storm, which brought a deluge of water measuring from 3.7 inches in Ashland to 4 inches at Patterson Park south of Superior. A culvert backed up, carrying out a 10-foot section of the Northern Pacific track at Poplar. The Nestoria Duluth train on the South Shore Railroad was held at Ashland. Sirens sounded at 5 a.m. today, alerting Bayfield that their problem of diverting rushing water from the ravine north of town is upon them for the third time this season. The waters were in control at 9 a.m., but the weary citizens are hoping the rains cease. Otherwise, it would leave sand and silt on the way to Lake Superior and the city's businesses, carrying water and silt to the Bayfield cannery. The waters inundated the Otto Kuhn Company fishery and the Northern Wisconsin Power Company. Quoting Bayfield Press editor Frank Dexter, "We've been fooling around with this for the past 11 years. Washouts were reported in Ashland, but damage is at a minimum, City Manager Harlow Richardson reports. Lou?
Thanks, Mike. Pickets will parade in front of Howard and Sell of the Superior Automotive Association Monday as the machinists of the Mechanicals Union Local 1502 struck another blow today for the demands for higher wages. Howard and Sell received a 24-hour strike notice from the union today. This is the second auto firm struck, following closely behind a walkout at Dingman Motors. And finally, sobering figures released from the Wisconsin Anti-Tuberculosis Association show that 90 patients are confirmed at the Middle River Sanitarium in Hawthorne, that's south of Superior. Last year, 6 people in Douglas County died from tuberculosis, and 26 new cases were found.
Man, oh man, cheery news from you today. Executions, war, atomic tornadoes, terrible floods, and TB.
The news is not my fault. I just gather it and read it.
Okay, campers, let's check the forecast for this Saturday, June 20th, 1953. Boy, I love June. Early summer, sweet breezes. Let's see, no rain with a low tonight of 55. Rain tomorrow and 65 with a stiff wind off of Lake Superior.
Pretty cheery forecast.
Weather's not my fault. Hey, campers and campettes, let's make happy time for the rest of the half hour, starting with Johnny Horton and the Battle of New Orleans on the Tim Michaels Evening Gather Round Show.
Nothing like a cheery war song.
In 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we caught the bloody British in a town in New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British kept a coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. We looked down a river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton fields and didn't say a thing. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Old Hickory said we could take them by surprise. If we didn't fire our muskets till we looked them in the eye. We held our fire till we see their faces well. Then we opened up our squirrel guns and really gave them well. We fired our guns and the British kept us coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it. Well, down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Yeah, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. We fired our cannon till the barrel melted down. So we grabbed an alligator and we fought another round. We filled his head with cannonballs and powdered his behind. And when we touched the powder off, the gator lost his mind. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Yeah, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go.
They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
There's Johnny Horton in the Battle of New Orleans on KUWS. Hey, campers, you'll want to set your tents at the Palace Theater, where the big picture Titanic starts tomorrow. Starring Clifton Webb and Barbara Stanwyck, you won't want to miss this one. At the Stardust Drive-In Theater, it's House of Wax in 3D, plus Errol Flynn in The Adventures of Captain Fabian. The Beacon has Doris Day and Gordon McRae, and By the Light of the Silvery Moon, plus newsreels and cartoons. The Tower Theater is showing The Wild Blue Yonder with none other than Wendell Corey. The Superior Theater features a twin bill, Tropic Zone with Humphrey Bogart. Now that guy I've heard of. And Off Limits with Mickey Rooney. Finally, Superior's World Theater has Bend of the River starting at 6:30 tonight. A swell bunch of flicks. Okie dokie yokie. Here's Perez Ferrado and Cherry Pink and Apple Blossom White on the Evening Gather Round Show. Prado and Cherry Pink and Apple Blossom White on the special Gather Round Wedding Show.
Wedding? I thought this... Bauen, ja?
Nein, nein, Franz. Nicht bauen. Baba talk heiraten, marriage.
What? Baba?
Baba is an expert on fashion, like Bertie is an expert on Bauern.
Why are you shouting?
Got to. They don't understand English.
I see.
We're honored to have German farmers Franz Kessler, Rudy Schindler, Herman Sommer, Douglas County farmers Jacob Schmidt, and Kirk Schimmedick, along with Douglas County farm agent Claude...
Call me Bertie.
Ebling. The farmers have been in Duluth and Douglas County for the past couple of days, touring farms and creameries as part of the Marshall Plan.
To educate German farmers about growing their agriculture. Get it? Growing their agriculture?
I'll be glad when redundancy is no longer considered funny.
Jacob, I call Jacob Jake, by the way, owns a fine farm. Fine farm. Fine farm. Fine farm.
May I?
Fine farm. Fine
by
farm.
All means.
Fine farm. Whoa. Thanks. Darn good farm in Summit. He came from Germany himself 40 years ago.
Herman Sommer, I understand that you're able to speak the best English of the group.
Including Bertie.
Ah, you kidder. Bertie loves a good gag.
Mr. Sommer, what is your take on the East German unrest?
What? Here, let me get it. I got it. Herman! What is your take on the unrest in eastern Deutschland now?
Yeah, the Ruskies coming.
But all you did was change Germany to Deutschland and yell.
Herman understands English okay. He's just hard of hearing.
Why didn't you tell me that?
Yeah, well, there is no reason for East German farm workers. If they don't do what the Ruskies tell them, they disappear. Farm folk go hungry. There is little to eat. A farmer can hold on to what he can exist on. But if the farm folk not starve, then the Russians take more away. Then, farmer go to West Germany, and the state takes farm.
It's terrible, terrible, terrible. Makes you appreciate the good old U.S. of A.
America! Eisenhower, good, McCarthy, good, Democrats, slackers.
Slackers?
We had lunch with Colonel Raffoli today. He gave France a brief lesson in politics. We talked to the thousands of people who flood into Western Germany from the Russian zone. He sent them fats and lard, which they cannot get.
Can't even get fats and lard. Terrible. Terrible.
We feed incomers. We find them a flat.
Are West German Chancellor Konrad Adenauer's programs working?
It is all right. He tried to get people to believe, like we do, the plan gate. It succeeds, but there is much work, much Arbeit yet to do. The German man on the street is ready to go along with Adenauer. We must make it work. France was a prisoner of war in Russia's slave camp for 6 years.
Yeah.
They kept France until 1950. From what he tells, anything you hear about the Russian atrocities in Korea are true.
Yeah.
You have traveled to several farms in the United States, including the Ozarks.
That they have. That they have. Part of that U.S. Department of Labor Marshall Plan thingy.
They've seen some of the best farms in the country, including right here in good old Douglas County.
Yeah, Großenbauer there.
They saw farms hundreds of acres large.
Owned by just one man, mind you. One man, right, Herm?
A big farm in Deutschland is 20 acres.
And Franz, you learned something else, didn't you? Didn't you? You guys are going to love this. Pig farmers in the Ozarks gave him lessons. Go ahead, Franz.
I don't know if that's a good idea.
Jake's plugging his ears.
Not a good sign.
Go ahead, Franz. It'll be great.
Schwein! Come and see here, Schwein! Come and see here, Schwein! Come and see
that's
here,
Schwein!
That's
the second time
Schwein.
Someone has done come a hog call here, on our radio program.
The first time that it's been done in a German accent. Thanks, guys. Hey, here's one for our German guests. This is Frank Weir and Happy Wanderer on the Gather Round Show.
Hey, you should have heard the Colonel after Franz did the hog call at lunch.
No way I translate that.
I love to go wandering along the mountain track. And as I go, I love to sing my knapsack on my back. Valerie. So joyously it calls to me, come join my happy song. Valerie, 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 beneath God's pale blue sky.
Frank Weir and Happy Wanderer on KUWS. Now, let's check sports with our favorite sports guy, Rapid Ray Paulson. Hey, man, you ever do a hog call?
Nope. But I saw a guy do it once. First, they called an ambulance. Then the cops. Then the men in white coats with a straitjacket. He not only gave up hog calling, he never touched another drop of moonshine after that.
So that explains the cops at the door. I'll be back, I hope.
Well, I hope so, too. Hello, fans of the sporting world. The Milwaukee Braves haven't had much trouble with the New York Giants this season, but, oh, boy, did they run into misery last night. The New Yorkers handed them their worst defeat of the season, a 15-1 shellacking. The Giants belted 16 hits while Sal Megley handcuffed our brave Braves with just 4 hits. Milwaukee remains a half game in front of the Dodgers of Brooklyn, a lead Giants manager Leo DeRocher doesn't think they'll hold. In fact, Leo the Lip likes the Cubs' chances of finishing above both the Bums and the Braves. Another slugfest yesterday, the Phils of Philadelphia took it to the Red Stockings of Cincy, clobbering them 16-3 behind the pitching of Robin Roberts. He got win number 11. On the home front, another washout last night for our beleaguered Blues. Glenn Bricky is set to start at Muni Stadium tonight for the 2nd Division Blues. He'll have his hands full with the Fargo-Moorhead Twins slugging outfielders Roger Maris, Ken Brasicki, and Bob Melton. This is Rapid Ray Paulson reminding you that everyone loves a good sport. King Timothy.
Thank you, Rapid. Well, Bubba's in next with wedding fashions.
So you didn't get arrested?
No, but I did have to play a request for them. So without further ado, here's Patience and Prudence and Gonna Get Along Without You Now on the Evening Gather Round Show.
The coppers want patience and prudence?
I almost got arrested again when I made that same crack. Of the sisters, Patience and Prudence, that's going to get along without you now on KUWS.
Patience and Prudence have a best of album?
Oh, they're all the rage. They're so cute. Prudence is 11 years old. Patience is 14. They are the cat's meow campers.
Say, where's Bubba? I'm looking forward to seeing a fashion critic by the name of Bubba
I don't think Bubba's going to make it, King Timothy.
But Bubba promised that he'd come.
He's on WEBC right now, talking with Jimmy Payton.
What? That Payton? He's always been out to get me ever since I beat him in bowling.
But you've never beat anyone in bowling.
He gave me a 100-pin handicap, and I drilled him good. He didn't take my victory dance so well, and I vowed revenge, so he took my Bubba.
I can say that Bubba says lacy Victorian bridal dresses are every young lady's choice. Bubba says it's because of Queen Elizabeth's coronation dress this month.
But did you see how much wedding dresses cost? Land's sake!
It's criminal.
$49.95 for the bridal gown and $19.95 for the bridesmaids' dresses.
Horrifying.
How and why on earth would you two know how much bridal dresses cost?
Well, I was playing the radio for the German farmers, and we thought Jimmy Payton's show was more interesting.
Than me? Than the Gather Round show?
Well, Bubba was good. You should have him on sometime.
Time to put out this campfire, folks, at least for tonight. But we'll be back same time, same place in your radio dial, the good Lord willing, and Jimmy Payton's thirst for revenge is quenched. For Rapid Ray Paulson and Lou Martin, I'm Tim Michaels, reminding you campers that we're pitching our tent here again tomorrow night, so gather around.
Boy, Bubba was sure good.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Payton does a good job, too.
Cute guys, real cute.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1953, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Duke Skorich, John Munson, Paul Guggenheimer, Brian Matuzak, Kent Vogel, and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1953 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.